Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Now, welcome to White Line Fever. This is the start of the program, but the end of the interview is confusing the hell out of these guys. We are with Mike and Jet from Tracer. Now, I wanted to ask you, we've talked in previous parts of this interview about being, you know, making headway, having some success overseas. What's it like when you go back to Adelaide and you hook up with your friends you went to school with? Do some of them get jealous, or do they just have no comprehension of what it's like to live on the road? What's it like?
Oh, we hang out with some pretty cool dudes that we celebrate success rather than... denote it, I guess. But it's tough for anyone coming off of a tour. You get post-tour blues, bad, whatever tour it is. It's quite difficult. Well, it has been in the past when we haven't been working when we've come back here. But now that we've got the Screaming Jets support and there's some groundswell in Australia starting to happen, it's kind of exciting to come back home, because we're not coming back home to sit on our butts. We're coming home to play more and show everyone what we've been doing overseas. So when we think about it like that, it's great coming home. Plus I get a cooked meal and sleep with my girlfriend.
I'm sure your buddies all ask for tour stories, and your girlfriend probably does too. But what do you have a favourite tour story that's good for general consumption?
General consumption.
I've got one.
Go on.
That's it's as PG as it gets. I guess this sort of happened.
It's ominous.
Yeah. This happened on our first tour. So we were touring in a small van, basically, that we put an IKEA bed into the back of and slept three, like, head to toe, in the top, put all our gear underneath. So
sure you did.
Yeah. So it was, you know, we all had sleeping bags, so there was no skin-on-skin action going on.
At least not at the start of the tour.
Yeah. Until it got real cold. And one night, because what we used to do is, have gigs Wednesday through to Saturday, and then for the other 3 days or 2 days or whatever, we had nothing to do, so we'd find a truck stop that was free to sleep in, and usually just get some beers and go to sleep, in inverted commas. One night we would, a few six packs down a piece, and we're all crammed in the back of this place, and we're like, man, I really need to go to the toilet. But yeah, shit, me too as well. So, in nothing but our underwear, we've all bailed out of this truck stop and ran to the bushes, and there's three cop cars that have loosened to just waiting, just screeching around the corner, like over the big PA saying, "Freeze! Freeze! Police! Freeze!" And we've got like our gentleman's private parts in our hands, like nearly stark naked, looking around like, what have we done?
Yeah.
And it turns out that they were on a 2-day sting trying to figure out who'd stolen the car that was parked next to us.
All right,
who was involved in some robbery or something. So we'd ruined their sting.
That's a great story. Yeah. Wow. If that's the PG ones, I'd like to hear the others. That's a really good story.
Well, we'll tell you those later.
But I was going to... America's obviously the undiscovered... the great promised land for rock and roll bands everywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, what, anything doing there?
We're working on it. We just came back from recording over there, and we've got half the new album done, it's obvious that in LA, where we recorded, it's just a hive of activity, and there is just so much happening, so much that can happen from it. And basically, the new album is basically our springboard to get our foot in the door, basically.
We've got a family over there now, so that makes it feel...
Wow, you have been having fun on tour.
Oh, yeah.
It's an inspiring thing to get to hook up with, a crew of really inspired individuals over there. And, I'm excited for it, personally.
Like, do you ever wonder, and I asked the guys in the treatment this the other day as well, do you ever wonder... Wow, if we were doing this 25 years ago, what our lives would be like, and maybe you wouldn't survive it. I mean, not many people did, you know, but does it cross your mind?
Oh, always. Yeah. I always wonder, like, if I was born when Led Zeppelin was growing up and doing what we're doing now, would we have changed the world? You know, what really would be awesome if we grew up in, like, the Bach times, you know, and we're playing the music that we did. Imagine that changing the world.
Well, what was that Steel Panther lyric? If I was born in 1573, Leonardo da Vinci would be jealous of me.
Like, that is... I don't spend very much time thinking about it.
You've watched Back to the Future too many times.
Yeah, I know. Funny you should say that. Yeah.
So what is... Well, I'll let you go in a sec. We'll get another song of you. What is, in these days, realistically success for a rock band in this country? Like, what is it? I mean...
Survival, man. It's like, that's success. You know, here's the thing. As you get older, you sort of go, okay, what does success really mean? Because you grow up on stories of hedonism and madness, Zeppelin, Motley Crue style insanity. But like, as you come up, well, at least for me, I go like, well, success is choice, you know? Success is being able to say, yeah, we're going to do that tour, or we want to record with that guy, or those kind of things. Like, and to me, that is success. You know, like being able to choose some stuff and not have to do things that you don't want to do. You know?
As we were saying before the interview started, just having a few different fan bases in different territories is kind of, it helps if your aim is longevity, doesn't it? Because, you know, and you could, I mean, let's face it, a lot of bands, let's say a lot of hair metal bands in the 80s, you know, they either don't exist now or they have to just play on weekends. But if you're DAD or if you're like Honeymoon Suite or one of those bands who have a home market to go back to, then they can earn a living. And yet they had similar levels of success in America, but they can actually earn a living because they've got a domestic market to go back to. So that's obviously what you're trying to get now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, our goal for quite a while is being able to quit our day jobs. Which I don't have a regular job. But
you still work sometimes?
Or? Yeah, I have to because we're not at that level of success yet. And that to me and to Dre, who also works a day job, that's been our thing. Like,
what do you do?
I do landscape at the moment. Or anything, to be honest.
If you want to give him a job, just email in.
Email me at, I'll sell my body for you.
And Dre does headphones and speakers for a big multinational.
He's a billionaire.
But, you know, that's the thing. Like, if we can live... If we can dedicate our lives to music and nothing else, that to me is success. If my day job is sitting down with these guys, writing songs, rehearsing songs, or touring... That to me is where it's at.
Guys, really appreciate your time. The worst thing about promising to write a story as well as do a podcast is I have to transcribe all this stuff. But anyway, that's my problem. One more song, guys.
Should we do one of ours again? Let's do one off of the Spaces in Between album. This is our first hit, I guess you'd say. It's called Too Much. Hey everyone, this is Mike from Tracer. You're on White Line Fever.
Welcome back to White Line Fever, episode 68. And this is the second part of the program where we just talk. Before I introduce our guest, our co-talkee, I've got to mention a couple of things. We're on Twitter, WLF Podcast. We're on Facebook. It's White Line Fever. It used to be White Line Fever Community, but change the name a bit easier there. And go to whitelinefever.ning.com. That's where you can join up and you get newsletters and stuff. I've been a bit slack in that department. I'm going to make sure that most of my posts go out. And also, if you donate, just go to whitelinefever.ning.com, the bottom left-hand corner, click on Donate, and I've got lots of exclusive content. What I've done, I actually put up some old football games. I don't know if I should be doing that, but I put up the 1994 Kangaroos versus Wales. I don't think you can find that anywhere else on the internet. Or I'm going to put up the 1982 Cup Final between Manly and Newtown. And also, if you're into your rock and roll, the unreleased Doomfox album, and also I've got a Van Halen interview from 1987, which isn't available anywhere else on the internet. They're all password protected. I'll give you the password if you donate. But really, I just want you to donate because you like what we're doing here and because you want to help us pay the hosting. Okay, we're back at an old haunt of the podcast. That is the Erskineville Hotel. And my guest is from the deepest north of England, but he doesn't sound like it. It's Johnny Davidson from League Express at Total RL and Rugby League World. How are you, Johnny?
I'm good, thanks. Good, thanks, Steve.
Can you tell us what you're doing here in Oz?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a working holiday. Working on a feature, hopefully on Greg Eden, a new Broncos signing from Hull KR.
You've come all this way to interview Greg Eden?
Not exactly, but you know, some meetings with some agents this week, and a bit of work, a bit of family from Newcastle originally, and it's good timing, obviously, with the season's over, both in the UK and the NRL here.
I'm going to give you up. You're also going to the Soccer Asian Cup, aren't you?
I do write about soccer as well. That's true.
You're trying to just sins of omission there, aren't you?
Yeah, I can add in I'm a Manly fan as well, so everyone will definitely hate me now. I do a bit of both, to pay the bills.
Let's talk about some issues in rugby league, and we'll talk about Super League, because it's not often this time of year you get to talk about Super League in the sun. Or we're risking sunburn. You've got your sunglasses on. What do you make of the new sponsorship of the Challenge Cup betting firm? And it's something that only a few years ago they didn't want a betting firm, and that's why we had this Stobart Contra sponsorship, which attracted a lot of criticism. So have they finally caved in?
Yeah, I think that the Stobart stuff was catastrophe, I think you could say. The game lost a lot of money, in terms of sponsorship that it didn't have. So I think they've basically realised the Challenge Cup is a strong property, particularly with the BBC coverage they get it. They're trying to make the most of money out of the game, and betting's a huge market as it is in the UK, as it is in Australia. So Ladbrokes have come on board.
Do you like the new competition structure?
For Super League, it's funny. I was actually talking to an agent this morning, and we tried to. I've sort of slowly come around to. We tried to explain it, and we both got lost at the end. Once the 3-8s come in, and how many games they play, and then who gets promoted. So it's very, very convoluted. I mean, growing up in Australia, and coming from the system we have, it's very, very hard to understand. But on the flip side, we don't have a second division, for promotion relegation, which is what the UK's about. So. I like the fact I'm based in Sheffield, so been to a few Sheffield Eagles games. I like the fact that they could go up and be against Wigan and Saints and Warrington. So that's exciting, but whether it actually works, whether fans buy into it, no one really knows.
What do you make of the, I'm going to be broad brush here, but the state of the game in England, having seen it up close? We've seen a couple of TV shows get axed. I understand the Super League Supermen and Backchat won't be back. I didn't get paid for that because I don't have a working visa, but it was a bit of fun. Sometimes I got paid in kind by Steve-O over the bar, so that's a bit disappointing. And also, not many rugby league riders left on the Nationals.
Yeah.
So what are the good things happening in Super League at the moment, and what are the bad things? And have you got any thoughts on what could be done to resolve them or improve things?
Geez, you put me on the spot there. As you mentioned, Backchat, obviously what's happening in The Guardian, I think, and The Mail as well. I think, there's a bit of, sort of boom and bust, you know, one step forward, two steps back, vice versa. You know, as you know, with journalism, you know, there's issues across the board, but I think the ratings for Sky have been quite positive. There have been increases, I believe. I think overall attendances were slightly up last season. So it's been a tough few years, but it seems to be a little bit of light in the tunnel. I mean, Rise of Catalan's Dragons, not Catalan Dragons. If you didn't get that memo.
It's Catalan singular, isn't it? Is it gone back to plural?
It's gone back to plural, yeah, yeah. There was a press release, I think, from the RFL, if I remember.
I thought that was grammatically incorrect, plural. I thought it was like saying the Welshes.
Well, French isn't very good, or my Catalan's even worse, so, yeah.
There's been two memos saying the opposite thing about how to...
Yeah. so, you know, they were quite a, you know, and Trent Robinson days, obviously, but now with Todd Carney and Willie Tonga as well, there's a bit of excitement there. Two teams have gone down. Obviously, you know, the Broncos, the fact that they're still around is good, but as you know, it was a bit of a schmozzle around World Cup time and what happened there, and obviously Bradford. So Bradford seemed to have stabilised a bit in terms of financially. I think the season tickets are going quite well. But, yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's very... I think everyone's sort of waiting to see what happens in the new season. You know, Salford, there's a... As you know, with Marwin, they're pumping a fair bit of money in the game, but you know, the results haven't been and the fans haven't been there. So there's lots of things to kind of look at and see, wait and see what happens. But the World Cup was a success. That was, you know, and it surprised me. I think the quality of footy was outstanding across the board. And the UK people really, really got behind. I know there was a lot of scepticism in Australia, but, you know, if you were there and you went to the atmosphere and the games, it was great.
As an England-based Australian rugby league writer, would you like to... I know you do stuff for The Roar as well.
Yep.
You can plug anything you like on this program. But have you got an ambition to sort of write rugby league back here or to write for more Australian outlets from England? Or what are your ambitions?
Yeah, definitely. I've been writing for The Roar for 4 years, mostly opinion. You know, I've done tons of NRL opinion. I do a few live blogs for NRL games. But yeah, definitely. Yeah, sending my hell wants to employ me or anyone, Fox Sports, but no.
You'll have to do it all from Sheffield, or is that a moot point?
You know, I'll fly in. No, plan is hopefully to move back a couple of years, you know. But I really enjoyed obviously getting into Super League. You know, didn't really follow it much when I was in Australia. But, you know, I think we a lot of fans, and I wouldn't include yourself in this, but a lot of people in Australian Rugby League look down on Super League. You know, think it's a bit of a joke, but if you actually watch the footy and, you know, you go to the games, it's a good competition, you know.
Okay, give us some predictions for 2015 in Super League. Who'll win the comp? Who'll get relegated? What will be the good events of the year? What will fall flat on its face? Give us some predictions.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the grand final replay, see what Ben Flower does. I think Warrington will have a really good season. I can see them top two. I think Ashton Sims is a fantastic buy. Wrote a feature on him coming out in Rugby League World. There's a little plug for you. As I said, I think the Dragons...
Big Metallica fan.
Yes, massive Metallica fan.
And he knows that his new boss knows Metallica. In fact, I think Shane Richardson had a meeting with Simon Moran recently in England, and James Hetfield just happened to show up. So there you go.
I think he'll do really well. And Darryl Clark, I mean, I think people in Australia would have seen him in the Four Nations, wouldn't have seen him before. I mean, he's an exciting player. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be in the NRL in a couple of years. Could be anything. So I think Warrington will really do well. Wigan, you know, they've lost a couple of players. They've obviously got a few young guys that are promoted, and, you know, everyone knows how good Wigan is at bringing through juniors, so I think they'll be up there. I think Salford will be in the semis this year. They're a bit more stable. And I think both the whole clubs were really disappointing last season, so...
Campo's a good player, isn't he? Although, did they... They got beaten by 30 points by Halifax on the weekend. Well, a couple of weekends ago, as you listen to this, but it stunned me, that result.
Yeah, Campo's a great player. I mean, how's his knee? How long has he got left? Also, the fact that, you know, they I think they lost 13 players from their squad, and they've brought in 10. So how long is that going to take to gel? You know, new halves, Albert Kelly, Maurice Blair, you know, they've signed some good players, but how long have they had to actually put them together? And Salford was the same last season, and, you know, they were terrible in some games, good in others, but finished, I think it was 10th or 9th, you know, out of the running. So I think one of the whole clubs really needs to do well, because, you know, it's the only city with two the two clubs. It's they're rugby league mad, and you know, I think the fans have sort of had enough from both clubs. I know a lot of old KR fans, and you know, Michael Wayman did really well actually in his debut. So getting to another Hull derby, and sorry, I'll just jump in quickly with the Magic Weekend in Newcastle, a new venue booked to go up. So I'm really looking forward to that. Great city, great nightlife. So
I booked nothing. Can we share a room?
I don't know how many the room is, potentially. Although I think my wife might be coming up, so that could be a bit weird, particularly if she's 6-7 months pregnant.
If you ask anyone who's ever shared a room with me, you would find yourself a wife between now and having to do so, just to avoid the trauma of it. Okay, I'm going to give you a rare honour. I'm going to allow you to pick a song. I'm going to give you a little bit of time to think. So maybe living in England, some Australian music you miss. You're from Newcastle. There have been some great bands out of Newcastle over here, so I'll let you think of a song and a band while I go through. Well, firstly, I need you to go to iTunes and give a comment, good or bad. Give a comment because it helps us be more prominent on iTunes. It lets people know about us. So go to iTunes and maybe even a song request from you, the listener. We're just about to have one from Johnny Davidson. I want to thank some donors, Gavin Rennick, Gareth Lawson, Leonard Andrew, Stephen Hurd, David Crellin, Ben Costello, John Flynn and Andy O'Brien, and that is enough time. What song would you like to hear?
I'm going to go with Alcohol by the Porkers. If you don't know it, it's a great song. I'll be having a few beers later on, so why not?
Awesome, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
People who drink too much make me very angry.
I demand to have some booze.
Comes Jimmy Beam now, and Jack Daniels again.
Now I need a drink.
Alcohol, I love you, alcohol. I love you, alcohol. Baby, I love you. I threw out the rules. I dream one day I'll win. I'll travel around the world. Carol Flynn. I live in the south of France. I have my own vineyard. I have a flat in Berlin and lots of credit cards to buy my alcohol. I love you, alcohol. I love you, alcohol.
About beer and fire. Shut up with the love
cans and shit everywhere.
Didn't help when I projectile letter.
Hey, this is Nash Cato
and King Roser. We're Urge Overkill. You're listening to
White Line Fever.
So, welcome back to the program. We're here with Robbie Farrell. We're at the West Tigers Media Day. I don't think I've been to a summer media day before, but now, what are the fellas like, the young fellas now? What do they say to you before they have to front the media? What do they Do they ask you questions? Tell us what happens.
No, they're pretty confident these days, the young kids. They always just want to know, you know, they say, oh, are you going to get hammered out there about me? Because... obviously, they know that you guys are always chasing me for a story and things like that. But the young kids are pretty cool. They understand that it's all part of the job now, and they're pretty comfortable with it.
Do you think, like, a lot of the blokes follow American sport, and they know, they're learning a bit more about sort of growing your own brand and, you know, getting personal sponsors and maybe when you retire, you know, having a career to go to? So they're more conscious of their image in that regard than they maybe used to be?
Yeah, I think it's probably one side of it. Also, they understand that from a club point of view, how important it is. You know, we need to embrace the media, and I think, you know, it can be good for the club. Obviously, it can be bad at times, but, you know, when handled in the right way, I think, you know, it's obviously a positive for the club, and it gets our brand out there, the Tigers, and, you know, hopefully that will generate interest and generate revenue for the game and for our club.
Before I move on to anything else, it's a bit different now, though, isn't it? Because in the old days, we, like, you know the reporters personally more than now, so a lot of the young kids coming through, they don't know, if they're scared, they don't really know what they're scared of. They're too young to have any good or bad experiences with the media, aren't they? They don't really know, because it's different now, because all the media opportunities are structured and they're very sort of sterile, you know?
Yeah, that's right, a lot different to when I started, and as you said, you're kind of, you know, back then you used to have relationships, you know, with some of the guys, and you know, ones you liked and ones you didn't like and things like that, and ones you would talk to. And but yeah, but nowadays it's very structured and you kind of just get told what to do and where to go and who to talk to, and it's part of the obligation of being a footy player.
What sort of footy are we going to see this season? We've heard there's a lot of confusion now about, first we heard the rules weren't changing, and then the refs were saying you got to roll straight off, which would mess completely with the fabric of the game, and it's only less than 2 months before the season starts. I believe you had a session here with the referees last week, and they told Jason you got to roll off straight away, and he actually didn't pass on the full message to you, and they were happy anyway. So are you shocked that they would make such a big change such late notice? Or?
Yeah, I think last year they did that. They made a change with the blading real late. I think it was January or February, and that threw a lot of teams out.
And could have led to more lifting.
Yeah, and then, but yeah, we had the refs out here last week and we were getting penalised. We played four quarters. The first couple of quarters we were getting penalised, and we had a chat about it at half time with them, and then they told us why they were ruling on the penalties, and we got better as it went along. So yeah, if that's going to be the case, hopefully we can start working on it from now and give ourselves 2 months to adapt to the rule change.
Is it realistic that players will just get up?
Oh, it's not realistic. Well, I think you just got to show. I think that what they want to see is some sort of effort, instead of just lying there, not moving at all. So you just got to respect the movement call from the referees, and just do your best to at least start moving. You don't have to jump up instantaneously, but you got to show some sort of effort that you're trying to get off.
And finally, Robbie, you've seen a lot of changes in the game in your time. Where do you think we're at now? Like, there's a lot of money coming into the game, but there's also, we've got a lot of old things we're hanging on to, like a really long fixture list and, you know, crowded fixture list and a lot of other things. We've sort of got a bit of the future and we're still trying to hold on to bits of the past as well. Where do you think the next big change is? Are we going to rationalise the fixture list? Is that the big thing? Or is there other things that you see are about to happen? Or, I don't know. What do you see as the next big change in the game?
Yeah, I don't know. I think... For me personally, I think obviously the fixture list needs to get looked at. It's just getting harder and harder every year. Season's getting longer. You know, we've got the Nines in 2 weeks, then the All Stars, and then 24 rounds of the toughest competition in the world. In the middle of that, you got State of Origin, which is uncomparable to anything else in the world. Finished by a final series, and then if you're lucky enough to play for your country at the end of that. you know, you go away with that. So, I think something needs to be done about the fixture list, whether it's the length of it, the timing of it, in terms of state of origin as well. I'm not too sure, but I think that'll be the big change.
I heard more than half of games lose money at the gate, like certainly Sydney games. They're just being held the whole year, apparently. It costs more money to open the gates than they make, so they're only just being paid for TV.
And
you would think that the next TV deal will go up anyway, so hopefully there's an opportunity to pull the number of games back.
Yeah, I think there's a review at the end of this year, I think, in terms of the TV deal and the salary cap and things like that. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there, but I guess that's why Dave Smith and those guys are there, is to work out what's best, and I think they're doing a really good job. And our game's going great. There's no doubt about that, but there's always room for improvement, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that.
Thanks, Robbie.
No worries. Thank you.
Welcome back to White Line Fever, and we're here with Brandon Yeagley of Crowbot, And we were talking before about Wolf Mother. Firstly, I'll get your opinion of Wolf Mother. It's kind of a multi-headed question, but the first, the whole sort of fuzz rock or 70s rock thing has become a kind of a hippie thing, if you know what I mean. It's been associated with alternative lifestyle, and that wasn't necessarily the case in the 70s. I mean, some of those guys were, you know, that they were mainstream people, corporate rockers, you know what I mean, in the 70s. Is that connect?
Very much so.
Yeah, exactly. What do you make of that connection? I mean, is it now kind of a, has it become like a sort of a counterculture sound now, and why do you think that's happened?
I think so. I think it has, and I think it's just relative, you know. They sort of go hand in hand, the same way that reefer and jazz used to go hand in hand, you know, way back in the day. I think it's what your ears sort of are magnetized towards.
Mm.
Or maybe it's just the fact that your ears just have this supernatural sense once you become under the influence of certain substances. It just sort of everything else becomes transparent.
Mm.
I'm not quite sure.
We haven't really touched on, like, and I apologize, we're just running out of time, but we haven't really touched on the album and some of the subjects, but there's a lot of sort of mystical subjects there. And the song about the Skull of Geronimo is about a secret society, and I heard someone talking about that the other day as well. Do you actually believe that there is a secret society that is kind of behind the scenes, Machiavellian, controlling our everyday lives, or not?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting to think, but I don't know. I would hope that such few amounts of people could have such extreme power in the world, but I don't know. Anything's possible, I guess. Anything's possible.
Because you've clearly got an... Sorry.
What's that?
No, I say you've clearly got an interest in... And, the word supernatural is in the song title, something supernatural. But which song on the new record is more, do you think, rooted in reality? You know, which thing... I just talked about a secret society. So which thing that you've written about do you think... you know, probably does have some sort of basis in reality, you know, on the new record?
Wow. I guess I would say, wow, they all sort of take place in some different universes sometimes. But I guess the most relative song could be Nowhere to Hide, for the simple fact that it wasn't my vision to make it a modern thing. It was actually the idea was sort of dating back to the days of the gallows, but it could very well be relative to today's situations as well.
Yeah, Brandon, we've only touched the surface in sort of 20 minutes, which is unfortunate. The listeners have heard it over three different episodes. I want to thank you for your time, and I'd imagine you've just introduced our final song. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Nowhere to hide.
Yeah. Going to turn around the corner way down yonder. But I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. And you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say. Okay, come on down and rock on.